So, I'm actually recording this a bit late. It's Sunday morning and I'm doing it. Because I was very busy most of Saturday, so I couldn't do it. And obviously, there was a new episode on Friday. But anyway, hello. This is an episode. It's a bit later than usual, but it's also raining a lot. So if you can hear rain in the background, I'm sorry, I can't really do anything about that. But I think it's quite nice. You explore a land of anxious eyes. I want to love you with my whole soul, the way my heart does. She loves you with everything she has. But all her friends are too afraid, enclosed, hard to reach, showered in stars that shine seductively but run when you appear. My music plays loud as I hang my heart out the window, waving to you, whispering, I want to love you. I know I love you. 9 hours melt to seconds, like candy floss when it meets the spray of the sea, and I melt too, sleeping under an illumination, night lights. There is a dream far above my head where I sleep beside you, and I love you with my whole soul, my whole heart, and all that I am. It was Valentine's Day this week, and it made me feel very appreciative of my relationship that I have, and, you know, very, very fortunate that I have found someone who makes me happy and who puts up with me as a person. And having that kind of, that moment where you find someone who does seem to be exactly what you want is, it's kind of a lot to take in, really, in a way. But it feels so nice. As I've said many times, welcome to the Jennifer Loves Her Boyfriend Very Much show. I hope you're having a good time, because I am. One of the things I say all the time is that I'm really annoying. Do you know what? This part's going to be very reminiscent of, do you remember the Christmas episode where I was like wrapping presents in the background? I'm like doing something with my hands currently. I'm not wrapping Christmas presents. I'm rolling a cigarette. I know. I shouldn't do it. I'm gonna die. But what can I do, you know? Once upon a time, I was like, I can quit anytime I want, I don't care. And now I'm like, bitchy thought. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Oh, fuck, what was I saying? It'll come back. Hang on. Oh, yes. So, I mean, like I said, I say to him all the time, I'm really annoying. And he always says I'm not. And I do things that I know annoy him. And I don't even do it on purpose. I just do it because they are unfortunate personality traits that I have. And it's like, I can kind of almost hear, like, this moment where, rather than, because, like, it could go
like, he could get mad at me, he could get irritated, but instead it's like I can literally hear the process where he just thinks, you know what, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's very meaningful, you know, because not everybody does that. Not everybody takes that moment to think, you know, this thing that is like, you know, a little bit annoying. I'm not gonna, you know, kind of get mad at her and be this way, you know. He's very okay with the things that through my life I've been kind of almost trained to think everybody will hate about me. And it's like I've become accustomed to this idea that there are huge parts of who I am as a person that people will find very off-putting and that they will hate. But with him, it's like kind of having to like learn that actually maybe all these things about myself that I think are terrible, maybe they're not so bad, and maybe it's just the people before didn't get it, but he does. That's pretty cool. It has just occurred to me that I could have lied about what I'm doing. And you wouldn't have known. You can't see me, but surprise John Cena. Anyway, but you know, I'm honest and shit. And not like, you know, when people on YouTube are like, oh yeah, I'm really honest, but then like they lie about everything. There's not a particular YouTuber I'm talking about there. I don't know what you mean, but you know, I try and be as hashtag authentic as possible, you know. And besides, I you know, I talk about these things all the time, so it's not like you're not going to know. I sing about them, I wrote poems about them, it is what it is. Consider this like a subliminal advert to go and perhaps stream some of those songs or read some of those poems in my new book and album. Do a sex machina, I don't know. Ooh. Hypnosis, subliminal messaging. Ooh, spooky. When you give my love to my family and friends, tell my mother that I'm so sorry for hurting somebody. Tell all the girls I loved a little too much that I love them still, though they're so, so far away. You'd better go far, far away. I got a message on Instagram asking me to read that, so I thought, okay, why not? It's quite old. It's from my third book, Homewrecker. Technically, it's actually the fourth because I put out kind of like a compilation book third, but I don't really count that as like a proper book because it's not. So it's from several books ago. But somebody asked and I thought, well, I'm still in the Valentine's mood, so I'll oblige. I've been asked a few times what it's about. I'm going to tell you. It's about Ted Bundy. I know. The first line, when you give my love to my family and friends, was something he said before he was executed. And I kind of wrote it about how strange I find the fascination some people have with him, the attraction, you know, because at his trial, for example, he had like literal groupies turning up and things like that, and
you know, there were women who would do anything for him, even though he had killed lots and lots of other women. And I always found that very strange. And so I just kind of wanted to write about the seemingly hypnotic charm that he had and how disconcerting I found it. But I actually sort of forgot that I'd done it, and I got a message and they were like, please, can you read this? You've never read it before, please. And I'm like, okay. I completely forgot about that, but yep, okay. So you're welcome to the person who asked. And let's all agree not to be serial killers. How about that for a very late New Year's resolution? What the actual fuck is going on with this whole politics business?
Well, everyone really needs to stand up and say that, okay, no, this is not politics in the normal British way. This is something darker and bleaker, and it's got to stop.
Peace is possible and must be achieved.
We want Scotland to remain inside the EU, and we want the UK to remain inside the EU.
Labour is weak and divided and completely unable to offer any sort of opposition to the Tories.
And I say to all the doubters,
we now return to week 864 of the Labour leadership mess. I just want them to fucking pick someone. Jesus Christ. Emily Thornberry's gone. I know. I'm sad about it. I mean, I don't know if she would have made a good Prime Minister, but she was funny as fuck. So that's disappointing for me on a personal level. And the contest is now far more boring as a result. Rebecca Long Bailey. Anyway. Momentum released a video where she sat down and she had a little chat with some Leave voters who used to vote Labour but didn't. Now, one of them starts banging on about how immigration means she can't get a doctor's appointment. Now, realistically, that is probably not the case. Realistically speaking, most of the reasoning for that is because doctors leave the NHS in England because working conditions are bad, wages are bad. They can make far more in the private sector and have a better quality of working life. So the NHS is having a very hard time retaining GPs, right? Now, Rebecca Long Bailey could have said that to her instead of just nodding along and being like, yeah, really sucks. But I mean, this is Rebecca Long Bailey, and I guess pandering to xenophobic stereotypes is her thing now. And she just went along with it. She didn't challenge it. She didn't, you know, talk to them about, you know, the actual facts. And she's an MP who's in the shadow cabinet, so she knows what the facts are. She knows full well that the far bigger problem with GP appointments and things like that is problems in the health service itself with staff retention. She knows this, but she still sat there and let them just bang on about how immigrants are terrible. And she threw immigrants under the bus to pander to these two people in the video. And I really feel like that says a lot about the kind of person that she is and the kind of leader she would be. And I have a horrible feeling that Labour voters will vote for her, because maybe that's the kind of party Labour wants to be now. You know, they have gone around and they've got themselves a positive name of being progressive and nice and whatever, and so they think, well, now fuck it, we can just throw them to the wolves. And I wouldn't be surprised. The madness continued. Richard Bergen, Virgin, whatever the fuck this guy's name is, it doesn't matter. He's a clown. He says that Labour should create a free newspaper that they give out to the public with essentially their side of events. The Labour Party, for quite a while now, has been pushing this narrative that they've been bullied by the media and they're being attacked and smeared by the media. And that all the journalists are picking on them, right? Now, this mainly comes from the fact that, you know, during the election and even before the election, there was a lot of negative stories about Jeremy Corbyn. Now, is it true that the media wrote negative stories about Jeremy Corbyn? Yes. Is it also true that most of them were based on fact? Also, yes. You know, reporting on things that Jeremy Corbyn has said in his past and people that he has associated with and things that he has lent his name to is not a smear. If he actually did it, it's not a smear. But Labour has hung on to this narrative of we are the victims and the press are bullying us. I think because it plays well with their membership, right? Because a lot of people in the Labour membership want to play the victim and act like their party was unfairly, you know, attacked by the press. Now, it is true that there were a lot of negative stories about Jeremy Corbyn and also other people in Labour. And it is true that it was the majority of right-leaning publications that covered them. However, there are left-leaning publications in the UK that, you know, covered Labour in a positive light. And even so, if you are going to pick a leader and several key figures in your party that have a whole bunch of fucked up, you know, fucking skeletons in their closet that the press are going to jump on, then you can't really play the victim because it's your own fault. You know, it's not hard when selecting a leader to do a couple of, you know, little looks around and see if there's anything that's going to come back to haunt them. But Labour didn't do that. And that's their fault. You know, if they don't prepare for the possibility of negative press coverage, that's their own fault for being stupid about it. Creating a free fucking newspaper, what is that? It's fucking stupid. It's just playing into the victim mentality of a lot of their members. But like, who's fucking paying for this? Are the people that write for it expected to work for free? Because, I mean, yikes. But you know what? Even if you eliminate all that, you know, who's paying for it? Are the writers getting paid? Are the editors getting paid? Why do they think it's a good idea in the first place? You know? Like, they could just stop putting themselves in a position where the press can jump on these stories. Stop putting people in positions of power who have so much that can be said negatively about them. stop allowing people into your party that are bad. For example, Holocaust deniers and racists, you know? Like, Labour can sit there and play the victim about press coverage, but they did a lot of this themselves by being stupid about things. You know, if you give people ammunition against you, don't be surprised when they use it. Creating your own publication, that's not really going to change anything. And Rebecca Long-Bailey had a similar idea. She was like, we're going to make, you know, a social media division to create, like, viral content to, you know, fight back against the media and the smears. I was just like, for fuck's sake, woman. Why are you like this? Like, can you not be like this for like 2 seconds, please? For fuck's sake. It was a fucking mess. It was awful to watch because it's like, you guys are being so cringy and I can't believe it. This is kind of away from Labour. So Rory Stewart is a former Member of Parliament. He used to be in the Conservatives, but now he's an independent and he is running for the Mayor of London. Which is a bit like, okay, fine. So he's decided he wants to be Mayor of London. Now, a couple of months ago, he also tried to be the leader of the Conservatives when he was still an MP. And he did this whole thing where he walked around the country talking to people. He had this whole hashtag and everything, Rory Walks. And he was talking about, you know, what he can offer people and talking about their problems and everything. And he's kind of recreated that for his mayoral campaign, but with an exciting and fun twist. Not only does Rory walk, but Rory walks into your house and stays over, right? He's got this campaign going where he's asking people in London to let him come and stay at their house so he can experience life as a Londoner. And he can experience spending time with them and talking to them about their problems. And he says he's going to bring a sleeping bag and some chocolates. I think his heart's in the right place and it's a cute idea, but it does very much feel like a stunt. Because, I mean, obviously this worked for him before. He got a lot of media coverage, a lot of social media talking about him. I don't think that Rory Stewart is going to be the Mayor of London. I really don't. But I mean, he's in a position where it doesn't matter if he is or he isn't, because he'll be fine economically. But it's created a lot of memes and I'm grateful for that. So thank you, Rory. Oh God, this was embarrassing. So there was, goodness me, a meeting of Cambridge City Council, right? And they were trying to agree the budget for the council, which is quite an important thing. And then Extinction Rebellion showed up. Remember them, Extinction Rebellion? And these guys were like peak middle class Extinction Rebellion. Like, you know what I mean? Anyway, they were like yelling at councillors about how the climate emergency was really bad. The budget that the council were trying to pass had additional funding to help with climate change. And additionally, a council cannot do as much because it is just a council. It's just a local council, you know. The central government can do much more because obviously a local council's powers are limited. But that didn't stop the Extinction Rebellion protesters. I cannot stress enough. I really can't. There's a journalist who posted a load of pictures and videos, Ben Hatton Journo. I really cannot stress enough how excruciatingly middle class these people were. It was just, fucking hell. You know what I mean? Like, it was so embarrassing. They were crawling over tables. They were, like, doing really cringy chants. Like, one of the girls, she said to the journalist, "We made a really powerful statement," and it's like, but did you? Did you really? Because from where I can see, like, all you did was fuck over local people who quite needed the council to pass that budget because they need the public services that come with it. But okay. And, you know, it's kind of like what I just said about Rory Stewart. You know, these protesters, if the budget doesn't pass, they'll probably be fine. You know, they'll be okay. But a lot of local people won't. And I can understand thinking, you know, oh, the climate emergency is important, because I do think it's important, 100%. But when you are fucking with the public and the services that they need, I don't think you're going to get any support. If you're turning up and you're doing fucking slam poetry and, like, cringy, embarrassing chants and, you know, abseiling into council buildings, which they did. I'm serious. You really need to check out the clips on Twitter. It was wild. Somebody was seriously, like, abseiling into the room, into the council chamber. It was, honestly, there was this girl and she kept crawling on the table and sitting on the table, and it was like, can someone give these people something to do? Like, honestly. Like, it's, go and fucking volunteer at a food bank, for fuck's sake. You know, go and help out at a beach cleanup, or, you know, a litter pick. Don't fucking do this embarrassing shit, because it just makes people think that climate change is stupid and not important and pointless, and you're just making it harder for people to actually get people to change their minds on this, you know. And I don't think they realise that, because a lot of the people who, you know, are part of this kind of, you know, scene tend to be people who just kind of, they don't see it. They don't see life for what it is. And so they think, you know, oh, I can disrupt this and I can do what I want because I'm making a difference and I'm important. And they don't understand how that looks to other people. And I'm like, wow. Well, here we are. Oh my God. So, please don't do that, people. It's cringy. There was a cabinet reshuffle. I'm going to be real. It was all pretty shit. I hated it. Because a lot of people I hate still have jobs. Dominic Raab is still the fucking foreign secretary despite being useless. Priti Patel is still the Home Secretary despite several fucking scandals for the Home Office just this week. There was a man who is stranded in Belgium having to live on the streets because the Home Office has stripped him of his citizenship, because apparently there was an admin error in his naturalisation application. He received no notice this was going to happen to him, because the Home Office fucking sent it to the wrong address. He has no way to get back to the UK. He has no money. He has no shelter. He's on his own. He's scared. And Priti Patel keeps her job, because of course she does, with her little evil fucking smug smile. Anyway, additionally, there was a lot of public anger because the Home Office was planning on deporting, I think it was around 50 people, to Jamaica. People who, for the most part, had been in the UK most of their lives. But the Home Office was deporting them as foreign national offenders. So there's a lot of public backlash, especially when it became apparent that quite a lot of the people, you know, had families here in the UK. Quite a lot of them, their crimes had been committed quite a long time ago and were, you know, some of them were, you know, low level offences. And so people were very upset by that. There was a court case that happened. Some activists took the Home Office to court, arguing that the detainees hadn't had access to phones and things like that, so they couldn't contact their lawyers. And so it was decided by the courts that quite a lot of people couldn't be deported because they hadn't had proper legal access. The Home Office went ahead with the deportation flight. They say that the people on the flight were not affected by the legal case, but we don't know that to be true. I would not be surprised if it wasn't. But again, of course, Priti Patel keeps her job. Let me tell you this. I have had dealings with the Home Office. I've had to call the Home Office for certain things. They don't even have a phone system that allows transfers, right? So when you call the Home Office, you know, when you call like a company or a business and, you know, it'll be like, press 1 to get through to this person, press 2 to get... The Home Office doesn't do that. It will say... It literally tells you, our phone system does not allow for that. So you have to sit there and you have to write down the number of the department that you want, hang up, and then call back. It's fucking ridiculous. I hate the Home Office. Anyway, Priti Patel still has a job because we're in hell. Oh, and Sajid Javid quit as Chancellor because because Boris Johnson basically said to him, if you want to keep your job, you have to fire your advisors. And he was like, fuck that for a plate of sandwiches, I'm out. Well, I don't know that he said that, but in my head he did. And so he's out. And a lot of journalists are speculating that was not the way it was supposed to go, and that they were hoping that he would just agree to fire his advisors. And because the plan is that there's now like a central team of advisors that advise both the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. And it's speculated that those advisors come from Dominic Cummings, who is kind of an advisor to the Prime Minister, and also some, like, just the world's worst fucking supervillain. And Sajid, or the Saj, as he pretended was his nickname during the leadership election to look cool, is not having any of it. But it was very embarrassing. Matt Hancock is still health secretary, despite the fact that the NHS in England is a right fucking state. Liz Truss is still Secretary for International Trade and Minister for Women and Equalities, despite having done absolutely nothing of value at all, ever. Gavin Williamson is still Secretary of State for Education, despite being forced into the House of Lords because he lost his seat. And again, having done nothing of value ever. It was just, honestly, a fucking mess. An actual mess. Jacob Rees-Mogg is still leader of the House of Commons, despite being a horrible bastard. And a useless person. So that's great. I fucking hate the government. Literally despise the government. Really want the government to stop everything that they do. Cannot deal. It's just, oh, honestly. There was a, going back to the never-ending Labour leadership thing, there was a debate on Victoria, Derbyshire, which the BBC is for some reason still cancelling, for the Labour leadership. This is when Sweet Emily was still in the race. I miss her already. And there was a Labour activist from Scotland called Selma, and she had something to say. She was passed the mic and she said about how none of them had really spoken about Scotland in that debate. When they had spoken about it during the contest, it had been very dismissive and very very ill-informed and things like that. She said about how Labour in Scotland were irrelevant because they weren't listening to people in Scotland. And I just thought, she said what she had to say. She said what needed to be said. And we had no choice but to stand. I think the fact that pretty much everybody in the leadership contest and the deputy leadership contest, besides one person, literally one person, is an English MP representing an English constituency. It really kind of affects the way that they see things. You know, nobody from Welsh Labour seemed to be considered at all. Nobody from Scottish Labour. I know they only had one MP, but still. Do you know what I mean? Apart from Ian Murray, deputy leader. Throughout the whole contest, their attitudes to pretty much everywhere except England have been very dismissive. When it comes to England, it's let's listen to the voters, let's, you know, hear what they have to say. But then when it comes to other places, other countries, you know, in the Union, when it comes to Scotland and Wales, they're very kind of like, no, this is what's happening. And I think a lot of, in fact, pretty much all of the people running for leadership and deputy leadership are guilty of this. And it says a lot about how England-centric the UK Labour Party is. You know. And I don't know how sustainable that is. You know, if you have Labour's own activists saying our party is irrelevant in the country where I live, you know, nobody in this contest has spoken about my country with respect, then where do you go from there? You know? Because Miss Selma, she made some points and she had every right to. I think she's right. But I can't tell you what Labour should do about it, because I don't know. I think they need to accept that England is not the entirety of this union that they think is so important. You know, because it really does seem throughout this entire contest that England is the only country that they are interested in listening to. You know, and I don't think that is a good way to proceed. But I also don't think that they care. I think Labour is coming round to the idea that they are probably not going to make significant gains in Scotland like they once did. I think they have accepted that, you know, while they may retain power in Wales, it's never going to be to the extent they had it before. And so they are focusing all of their energy and attention on London, but they are never going to make gains in Scotland and regain some of the things they've lost in Wales if they don't try. You know, if you don't put the effort in, you're never going to get anything. I think that's something that maybe everybody in this contest needs to hear. You know, if you don't try, you don't get anything. You know, and this is something I've experienced living in constituencies where Labour were running but never really bothered trying with. You know, this last general election was one of the only times I have ever received anything from the Labour Party. I didn't get canvassed, but I did get a leaflet through my door. Now, I live in a safe Conservative seat, but the Conservatives, they still put in effort. Even though they know pretty much guaranteed they're going to win the seat, they still tried. Labour didn't really, you know, and it was the same where I used to live, which again was a safe Conservative seat. The Tories would put in some effort, but Labour wouldn't. And it's like, well, how do you expect to ever, you know, win anything if you don't try? Now, where I live now used to be a Labour seat. Labour held this seat for a very long time, and they could again, but they have to actually want to. They have to actually put in the effort, because otherwise it's just going to stay the way it is. And I think it's the same, you know, with this whole situation. But at this point, I don't know that Labour even deserves a chance, you know, with those voters, because they've disregarded them for so long. They've, you know, constantly thrown out this message of, you know, your government that you voted for is horrible because you vote wrong. You know, you just need to shut up and vote Labour. We'll give you what you need. You know, what you think you want is not what you actually want. Just shut up and listen to us. And so, I mean, do they even deserve a second chance? I don't know. But they're certainly not going to get it by constantly ignoring the fact that voters there are saying something that they don't like. You have to confront it and you have to deal with it. Seconds surround me as I sleep. Tiny fragments of your laugh, the sweet sound of your voice when it is nasal, strangled by a strain of cold you have never met before. Whispers of the first and last time you said you loved me. One day it will be decades, years, forever, but for now, months, hours, minutes, days, seconds. Time is a dangerous thing for a woman like me to have, but I have it, and I crave it with you, clawing with broken, badly painted nails at the future to bring it closer to me. I am immersed in hundreds of thousands of minutes and memories that I will hopefully forget and then remember again as I open and close my eyes each day. Sent back and forth from my past to our present to recall how I became we. Another hour passes, sand passing through the glass, time trickling away. you closer and closer. I, with my arms wide, my eyes wider. I taste forever, stars, heaven upon my lips when I dare to say your name. I can remember previous relationships where it took like forever to reach a point of feeling secure in a relationship and good in a relationship. You know, because that connection isn't there and you kind of try and force it and it doesn't work. But when you find someone and it just happens naturally because, I don't know, maybe you're supposed to be with that person, or maybe that person is just everything that you need and it just happens and you don't have to wait around for that moment where it feels right and it feels good, because it just happens. And then you don't obsess over time because you're working to this schedule and thinking, you know, we haven't reached where we're supposed to yet, oh my God, what do we do? But you obsess over time because you're thinking, I wish I could have had this my whole life. And I'm so grateful for what I have now. And I just hope I can have it forever. So, a TV presenter called Caroline Flack has died. It's reported that she took her own life. I'm not gonna sit here, like some people are, which honestly I find weird, and pretend like I was a huge fan, because I wasn't. I wasn't really that aware of her work. I would see news stories about her, you know, on social media. But I didn't really, like, know much about her. From what I could tell, I think she presented Love Island. I don't really know what that is either, but... sort of up until kind of like last year, most of the stories I saw about her was like, you know, articles about like outfits she wore, or her going out with her friends, or, you know, if she broke up with someone or she started dating someone, that kind of thing, which is quite common for like tabloid reporting that just kind of, you know, through the power of algorithms, works its way into your feed, even if you are not that interested in the people it concerns. But then stories came out about allegations against her of domestic violence. And like the narrative changed, obviously. And there was lots of backlash against her from the public. And lots of people who were very angry with her. She got a lot of backlash on social media and things like that. And everything had kind of gone quiet, I think, from the public and the media, really, because she, I think the trial was starting next month, I think. There'd be a couple of stories every now and again about her. But then obviously this weekend, it's the big story. You know, she had died. And the narrative changes again. And suddenly the public are angry with the media for reporting about her and you know, making her feel bad. Some of the stories that were reported were things that really were probably not in the public interest and people didn't need to know. You know, things like, you know, there was a big story that came out sort of the end of last year about how she was devastated because she wanted to spend Christmas with her boyfriend and he said he wanted to spend it with her, but she wasn't allowed to see him because of the allegations and the trial and everything. I wouldn't really say that is in the public interest. I wouldn't say that, you know, people need to know that. But nonetheless, it was reported. And there was, you know, sort of this constant stream of news stories about her for a while. And so quite a few members of the public feel that is to blame for what has happened. There are some people who are blaming social media companies and they're saying, you know, people were trolling her, people were constantly tweeting her, people were bullying her. I don't follow her on social media. So I don't really know what state her mentions were in. I couldn't tell you. Although I would not be surprised if it was the case that people were constantly tweeting her or leaving, you know, mean comments. Because I think, to be honest, anybody who has a social media account has probably had that experience. So people are blaming social media companies and saying, oh, you know, we should do something. And there's this campaign on Twitter called Caroline's Law. People want to stop the press from reporting things that they don't have confirmed facts that it's true, or things that are not in the public interest. And then, of course, like there pretty much always is, when something like this happens, there's a whole stream of people who are saying, you know, think about mental health. You never know what's going on in someone's life. Be kind, be excellent to each other. I think that quote's from a thing and I fucking hate seeing it on my timeline. It annoys the fuck out of me. I don't know why, but every time I see someone say, be excellent to each other, it just seems really like contrived. I just fucking hate it. I don't know. But anyway, but everyone is, you know, kind of pushing this whole thing now of, you know, be nice to people. You don't know what they're going through. You know. But the way that tabloids work, especially now in an online age, is that they will throw out stories on a constant basis to meet the demand set by the public. So if there are constant stories coming out about Caroline Flack, going out with her friends and partying and wearing pretty outfits and, you know, posting cute Instagram posts or whatever, then there's a reason for that, because that is what the public has signalled to the media that they want. Because they will interact with that content and they will share that content and they will engage with that content. And so they will create more of it, right? Now, if there is a huge stream of negative stories about her, you know, calling her an attention seeker, saying that she's trying to play the victim with the allegations and, you know, saying that she's a horrible person and, you know, things like that. Again, when the public engages with this content, and they did, that signals to the tabloids that that is what we want. And, you know, so just from the media perspective, this seems to be a lesson that we never learn. When Amy Winehouse died, everybody was like, we have to stop this. You know, the media killed her. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like the media did not have an impact. But the only reason that they were doing that is because they knew it was profitable. If nobody was engaging with those stories that they wrote about her, if every time that Amy Winehouse's suffering was plastered across the front page of The Sun, nobody bought it, then eventually they would realise, okay, there's no money in reporting in, you know, this girl's troubles. Let's do something else. And the same thing applies here. It's hard to do, especially at a time like now, when somebody has died. It's hard to confront these things. But if you engage with that content, you are signalling to the makers of that content that they should keep going and they should do more of that. So rather than trending something on Twitter and putting out petitions, if you really want for the media to stop, you know, this kind of reporting, to stop throwing out stories based on speculation and Instagram likes and, you know, all that shady shit, if that's what you want, then it has to start with you. It has to start with the public. You have to stop engaging with it. You have to encourage others to stop engaging with it. It's not enough to sign a petition or to write to your MP or to trend something on Twitter. Because if, you know, I keep using The Sun as the example for this, because honestly, out of every publication in the UK, they are definitely the most guilty of using other people's suffering and bad situations to make money. If you are still, you know, even with these topics and, you know, trending topics and petitions and, you know, if you do a protest, whatever, if people are still clicking on those links, if they are still buying those papers, if they are still engaging, then The Sun isn't going to give a shit. They're not going to care about the backlash they might get from the public, because if they're still making money from these stories, they're not going to care. The Sun specifically, they actually, they deleted some of the negative stories that they had written about Caroline Flack after her death was announced. And quite a few people noticed and called them out for it. But, you know, a couple of hours later, they were writing very negative stories about celebrities that were not in the public interest. They wrote something about Katie Price's house. Katie Price, if you don't know, is she was a model, and then she became, like, she started quite a few businesses. And again, I don't really know too much about her career, but I know she did try and be selected for Eurovision one time. So, you know, whether she should or shouldn't have is another discussion. But, you know, anyway, but The Sun, just a couple of hours after talking about how tragic it was that Caroline Flack had died and the circumstances of her death, they wrote a piece about Katie Price's house. And they talked about how her house was, like, really bad and, you know, it looked horrible and things like that. Again, what is the public interest in that? That's her house. You know, is the public paying for it? No. Does the public live there? Apart from her and her family? No. It's not really anyone's business how her house looks. So there's no need to report on that. And yes, there were some people on social media, some members of the public, who were outraged, and they said, you know, you've just deleted negative articles you wrote about Caroline Flack and put up your little, you know, post about how sad it is that she died, but then, like, hours later, you're doing the exact same thing to someone else. But I guarantee more people will have clicked on that link than will have posted in anger about it. More people will have clicked through, scrolled past some ads, which makes The Sun money, given them some web traffic, given them some engagement on that content, which again just signals to them, keep doing this, it works, right? Because, I mean, that's how it is, you know? So if you really want to make a difference, trending something on Twitter is probably not going to help, really. Signing a petition is also probably not going to help. The best things you can do, talk to the people you know. Tell them about why, you know, engaging and sharing with this content that is made to be viral, it's made to be shared. Tell them why engaging with it is bad, because you're just encouraging more of this kind of content and the problems it creates. Instead of just writing to your MP and saying, what happened to Caroline Flack is really bad, we should do something, you know, you could look at, you know, campaigns that are already going. There's no point starting another offshoot campaign when there are already campaigns happening. For example, the campaign for the second part of the Leveson inquiry into press intrusion and press treatment of people. Lobby your MP about that, because that has a more realistic chance of happening than an entirely new law based on this one thing. I mean, I understand in the, you know, people are upset and they're thinking, I want to do something, I have to do something, but you have to be realistic about the limits of what you can do, and the way to do things that will mean you'll actually get results. Because it's not nice to hear, but signing a little petition that you found on Twitter is probably not gonna do anything. But, you know, encouraging people not to engage with that content, that could. Supporting the second part of the Leveson inquiry, that could. You know, additionally, what I've found very strange about the situation is a lot of people on social media, like I said earlier, everyone's saying, you know, be kind to people, be nice to people, be excellent to each other. God. You know, you never know what people are going through in their lives, mental health. They also say that around kind of Mental Health Awareness Day and all that kind of stuff. And just pretty much any time something like this happens. And there's a lot of people now saying she was a beautiful person. She was really nice. I really loved her. She was amazing. But I mean, a lot of people weren't saying that before. There were some people that did. But quite a lot of the people now saying it were not saying it before. And like I said, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I was like a fan of hers. And, you know, I'm like, I know all about her career and I've like, you know, been aware of everything that's gone on, because I really haven't, you know. I'll be honest, I didn't really know much about her. I didn't really follow her career. She was just kind of someone I was aware of. And, you know, that could be the case for a lot of people. But what I'm saying is that now we're seeing this outpouring of love for this person. Everybody loves her. Everybody thinks she was a beautiful person. She was kind. She was wonderful. But 6 months ago, if you typed her name into Twitter, there was none of that. There was a lot of negative things. And I'm pretty sure that if you cross-matched some of the accounts who are now saying she's wonderful and she's amazing, they would have been the ones sending her negative stuff 6 months ago. And so I think maybe that's something to think about too. Currently on Patreon, I have a special offer available for existing and new subscribers. Everybody who is subscribed, I can't even speak properly. Jesus. Anyways, everyone who is subscribed on Patreon by the 3rd of March will receive a signed copy of my new book, Deus Ex Machina. So existing subscribers will get it, and anyone who signs up before the 3rd of March will also get it. So you can find the details for my Patreon in the description below or on my website. You get behind the scenes access to my working process, the things I do, my day-to-day life, if that's of interest. You get early release content, you get exclusive content that I don't release in other places. I'm going to be putting up some stuff from the podcast that is probably not going to be aired. I will be putting that up for Patreon subscribers this week as well, for an example of the kind of things that subscribers get. And whenever I release something, you get a free digital copy of it. And as I said, if you are subscribed to my Patreon by March 3rd, whether you are an old subscriber, whether you are a new subscriber, whether you are on the $1 tier or the $10 tier, it doesn't matter. As long as you're subscribed, you are getting a signed copy of the new book. So if you're interested in subscribing to my Patreon and taking advantage of this special offer, the details are in the description. Or you can visit my website, jenniferwan.com, and find out more there. Wow. we've reached the end of the episode, but we'll be back next week with more of this. Thank you to the top tier Patreon supporters: Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, Eleanor, Alicia, Emily, Andy, and Tyler. If you want to support the show and other things I do, then you can through Patreon from $1 a month. And as I said in the very helpful kind of segment earlier, there is a special offer on right now. You can also enter the giveaway. The details for that are in the description. And I will see you next week. Good night, my love.